shortwave, AM, FM, and the internet. This is PCJ. Yeah! It's now time for the Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Perrone.
Oh, no!
Hello, everywhere. Welcome again to another edition of the show. It's really nice to have you with me for the next 55 minutes. We have a mystical show for you today. Yes, that's the only thing I can say. A mystical show. Plus, some music requests actually that have come in from some of you. Well, they're not exactly for music. Well, they are for music, but they're not for songs. And I will explain in a little bit what exactly I mean by that. Our website, by the way, if you want to find out more about PCJ and the Happy Station Show, is very simple, www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. So hello, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, and to our listeners around the world. Okay, we're going to kick off with a piece of music which might give you an idea of who my special guest is today. He has no connection with the song whatsoever, but it is what the song is about. One particular thing what the song is about. The song is called Zombie, you know, Zombie, like Oogly Oogly Spookies and stuff like that. Zombie Jamboree, Harry Belafonte on the International Happy Station.
It was a zombie jamboree, took place in a New York cemetery. It was a zombie jamboree, took place in a New York cemetery. Zombies from all parts of the island, some of them was a great Calypsonians. Although the season was carnival, they get together in Bacchanal and they're singing back to back, belly to belly. I don't give a damn, I done dead already. Oh, back to back, belly to belly at the zombie jamboree. I hear you talking back to back, belly to belly. Don't give a damn, done dead already. Oh, back to back, belly to belly at the zombie jamboree. One female zombie wouldn't behave. See how she jumping out of the grave. In one hand a quarter rum, the other hand she knocking conga drum. The lead singer starts to make his rhyme. The zombies are rattling their bones in time. One bystander had this to say. Was a pleasure to see the zombie break away. And they're singing back to back, belly to belly. Don't give a damn, done dead already. Oh, back to back, belly to belly at the zombie jamboree. I go and talk to Bridget Bardot. I tell her, Miss Bardot, take it slow. All the men think they're Casanova when they see that she's barefoot all over. Even old men out in Topeka find their hearts getting weaker and weaker. So I go ask her, for your sake and mine, at least wear her earrings part of the time. And I'm singing back to back, belly to belly. Don't give a damn,
down dead already. Four back to back, belly to belly at the zombie jamboree.
A lot of world leaders talking about war, and I'm afraid they're going too far. So it's up to us, you and me, to put an end to catastrophe. We must appeal to their goodness of heart and ask them to pitch in and please do their part. Cause if this atomic war begin, they won't even have a part to pitch in. And we'll be singing
back to back, belly to belly, don't give a damn, done dead already. Back to back, belly to belly at the zombie jamboree.
I hear you talking
back to back, belly to belly, don't give a damn, done dead already. Back to back, belly to belly at the zombie, zombie jamboree.
The one and only Harry Belafonte with Zombie Jamboree here on the International Happy Station. And I'll tell you what that song has to do with today's special guest. Now, not too long ago, we received an email from Sebastian Bond, and he listens to this program in the United Kingdom. And he was saying that when he first started listening to the Happy Station show, it was way back in 1986, and he remembers the theme song that was used on the show from the Tom Meyer era, and is it possible for us to play on the show? Well, I know it's unusual to request a theme song for this show, and I thought, well, why not? We haven't played it. We haven't played it, have we? Yes, we haven't played it. So going out to you, Sebastian, the theme song from the Tom Meyer era of this show.
Shortwave from Hilversum in Holland, this is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. It's Sunday and time for the Happy Station show, produced and presented by Tom Meyer.
And therefore, Sebastian Bond, the theme song to the Happy Station show from the Tom Meyer era. Now, we've had requests for music on the show before, but nothing like that. So thank you very much, Sebastian, for getting in touch with us. If you want to get in touch with us, of course, you can do it via our website, www.pcjmedia.com. Or we also have a Facebook page. Just do a search for PCJ Media. Come in, join the group, upload your pictures or memories of this show. And, you know, if you have a suggestion or want to say hello to somebody or tickety-boo, that's actually Peter Anthony Holder saying. I shouldn't have said that. It's probably copyrighted. Do it all through the website. Okay, time now for a little bit more music, and then we will get to our special guest that we have today. Now, this is another clue of who maybe my special guest is. Hopefully this will be a clue. I'm not sure, but it's a nice song anyway. It's Val Dunagan and Mysterious People on the International Happy Station.
Children are people who live in a land made of raindrops and puddles and pebbles and streams, solemnly watching a twig as it sails on a clear crystal pool to an island of dreams. There go a pair who have just built a city of mud, and it's real. They know that mud doesn't look very pretty, but ooh, how it feels. This little boy greets the snow with a smile. That little girl has discovered an isle made up of pillows. One little fellow is friends with the wind in the willows. All of them children and all are mysterious people. I can remember when I was a boy that my bed was a ship that I sailed through the night. And I remember the world as a place that was eager and loving and shiny and bright. Where is the boy who was friends with a rainbow and once rode upon? Where is that shy and mysterious person? Oh, where have I gone? I can remember I once said my prayers, but now I stand by while my children say theirs, watching them kneeling. And I could cry that one day they'll forget all that they're feeling. Oh, what a shame that our children should grow into people.
Mysterious people, Val Dunigan here on the show. Okay, now, you probably still have no idea of who my special guest is today. But before we get to him, I want to perform a magic trick for you. Yes, I'm a bit of an amateur magician and musician as well, but I do like doing magic tricks, especially at parties and at the pub. Especially, it's a good way to get free drinks. So, as you know, I like having with me a fresh cup of coffee as I do the program. And, of course, I have a spoon. Now, I am going to attempt right now to bend this spoon, the one that I'm holding in my hand at this very moment, by using my own mystical powers. Yes, I have this special sense, this special thing in my head, and I can bend objects at will. So, I need everybody to be quiet, because I do need to concentrate. Okay, so I have the spoon now in my hand, and I am channeling all the energy from within my body towards the spoon, and I will bend the spoon and make it fall into two pieces. The energy is coming through. Yes, I sense that Xenu is standing right above me. Oh, yes, the magical powers. The magical powers. And the spoon will... Well, that didn't seem to work so well. Oh, it's a plastic spoon. Yes. Where's the metal spoon, guys? Oh, it is, isn't it? It's still in the canteen. Well... Yes, as you can hear, I just broke a plastic spoon in half. It actually really is the spoon that I'm using to stir my coffee. It is a plastic spoon. Now, what does that have to do with my guest? My special guest on today's International Happy Station is the one and only Amazing Randy, otherwise known as James Randy. Now, many of you are familiar with him, and he's an absolutely fantastic person, and is just amazing, really, at what he does. In fact, I mean, I learned some of my magic tricks from him, but we'll talk about that on another program. He's our special guest today, and my first question to him was, why did he decide to do what he is doing now?
At the age of 60, I retired from the business of being a magician and an escape artist, and I found that I was ready to start to do what I consider now to be much more serious things, that is to inform the public and particularly the media, try to have some influence on them to get them to report more accurately so-called paranormal, occult, and supernatural events. And I started the James Randi Educational Foundation shortly after that, but it was because of my experience as a magician that I was able to do this because I have that peculiar expertise.
When you started doing this, were you amazed at how many people out there claim to have supernatural powers?
Oh, no, not at all. Ever since I was a teenager, in fact, even before that, I was well aware that the world was heavily populated with people who claimed to have various mystical powers like this, and I'd always chafed at that fact and wished that I could make more people aware of the fact that they were being deceived.
You know, here's a little anecdote for you, but, you know, after watching a number of the TV appearances that you did and also some of the videos that you have at your foundation, I mean, I've always sort of been, I consider myself an amateur magician. I've always enjoyed it, you know? And I've learned so much just from watching you and watching you watch others, you know? And for example, one of the tricks like that you were on a TV show with Bob Barker where this guy said he can move pages in a phone book and move a pencil around. I'm like, oh, I have to learn that trick. And somebody said, how did you learn to do it? I said, I learned it from James Randi. You know, when I watch that clip now, it's amazing because that happened such a long time ago, but these people seem to be coming up again and again and again, maybe different ones, but people still fall for it.
Well, the problem and the situation all resolves down to the media themselves. The media doesn't care whether what they produce is true or whether it harms anybody or misinforms or deceives or causes grief to anyone. They're only interested in whether there's a good story. And the good story will please their sponsors, and that means the money keeps coming in. The media is almost single-handedly responsible for the present belief in the paranormal, the occult, and the supernatural, because they promote it shamelessly, and they're not very happy about people like myself who come along and try to explain to the public how these things are done and that they should beware of what the media tries to tell them.
There's one famous appearance that you did with Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show concerning Uri Geller from Israel. How did you get involved with that, and how did Carson get involved in that?
Well, Geller had just recently been discovered, so to speak, and his management people were getting him on all kinds of major shows. I got a call from Johnny Carson's staff said that he was going to be on the show that night. I was living in New Jersey at the time, which is on the east coast of the United States, and as far away as you can get in the United States was Los Angeles, and they asked me if they could get me out to the airport in a big hurry, could I fly in time to be on the show that night with Geller. Now, I was familiar at that time with the fact that every time that Geller was about to make a major media appearance, my phone at my home in New Jersey would ring, and I'd answer the phone, and it would simply hang up. And, of course, I would run to the television immediately because I knew that Geller was someplace in the United States about to make an appearance, and he was checking at my home to make sure that I was there. He wanted to be sure that I wasn't behind the furniture someplace in the studio. And if he heard my voice coming from my home phone, he knew where I was. So I said, no, I won't go out to Los Angeles, but I'll tell you how you yourself can spoil any effect that he might want to produce on you by trickery. I said, but if it's the real thing, it will work in spite of the information that I will give you. And I told the prop man, the fellow who handles all the property items in a big prop cabinet with a big lock on it, I said, make sure that you get exactly what Geller asks you to get. And then I told him how to prepare the props in such a way that if trickery were being used, it couldn't be used to do the tricks that Geller was about to do. And indeed, that's exactly what happened. That night, Geller went on the program, and he was unwilling at the very beginning of the program to even participate, because he realized he'd been unable to get to the props and prepare them in the ways that were necessary for them to work.
That's rather extraordinary that, you know, either him or his people would go to the lengths to call to make sure you were home. Did you ever think maybe you should have, like, Rich Little standing by your phone to impersonate your voice?
Yes, well, then Rich would have to answer all the questions people would ask him, I guess. So it would be difficult.
You know, one of the other big stories around your career with your foundation involves Peter Popov, and how you put it, he wasn't receiving messages from God, he was receiving messages from his wife. And it's rather extraordinary that this story is all over the internet, everybody knows about it, but yet he's still taking advantage of millions of people around the world, giving them free holy spring water, whatever the product is called, and then asking for money to make the holy water become active.
Yes, well, it's because people aren't very smart, and they don't listen to what they're being told. Now, right after I did the exposure of Popov, again, on Johnny Carson's show as well, that was very, very powerful, and Carson was convinced, I wasn't convinced, but Carson was convinced that that would be the end of Peter Popov. Just last year, his financial statement shows that he made $1 million American more this last year than he did the year that he was exposed on the Carson show. Mm-hmm. So those techniques do not work because people don't listen, people don't want to know, and if they are told this sort of thing, they just shake their heads and smile and walk on. I got all kinds of calls from people, and emails as well, from people who said, oh, I'm so glad that you told us about Peter Popov. Obviously, he's a fraud and a fake, so now I'm going to give my money to Reverend so-and-so, some other person doing exactly the same stuff Popov was doing. And they are determined that they're going to be swindled. They're determined they want to give away their money, they want to be cheated, they want to be stolen from.
You know, it's rather sad because these people are taking advantage of people that are in such many cases dire straits that they will turn over thousands and thousands of dollars. And, you know, these guys who are doing it, I mean, personally, if you ask me, I see them as they're criminals. They're just another form of criminal.
I look upon it that way. As a matter of fact, Peter Popov is coming up for examination in Uplands, California, where he lives. The people there are trying to get rid of him. They say that he's a crook, and he's been accused of all kinds of things, and they're trying to bring legal action against him. The next few weeks will tell the story of that.
Mm-hmm. You started this thing, which is the million-dollar challenge. Now, originally, it wasn't $1 million. So is this gonna the kind of thing that, over time, with you know, interest rates, is just going to increase?
Yes, well, it's $1 million at the moment. It was $1,000 at one point, then it became $10,000. Momentarily, it was $100,000 for a special TV program that I did out of Los Angeles, and then it went back to being $10,000 again, and then a very rich, obviously a rich gentleman, gave us $1 million to put some teeth into the offer, and it stood at $1 million ever since. It's now, I believe the fund is now at $1.2 million, and we can take the interest off the top of that to help run the foundation if we need it, and we do from time to time.
You know, just a couple of days ago, I was watching a documentary from National Geographic, and they were talking about the supernatural and how certain people can feel ghosts and feel spirits and everything. And they said that psychologists have said that it comes down to if they believe that they can see ghosts and everything, they can be put into any situation and they will see ghosts. Whereas other people who are more skeptical, they go, well, I don't think, you know, they won't see ghosts. And they tested different groups of people, and it was amazing that the results, I mean, I suspected the results would come out the way they did, but, you know, the psychologists who were testing it were just like, you see, this goes to show that a lot of these people that can feel spirits and feel ghosts, you know, it's, a lot of it is in their mind.
Oh, yes. I've never doubted that people who say they can see and feel these things really believe, in most cases, honestly believe that they can. They're self-deluded, but they don't see the difference. I often hear them saying, but Mr. Randy, this was not an hallucination. And I say, but what is an hallucination? An hallucination is something that appears to be real and is very convincing. So how do you know it's not an hallucination? They say, well, it's not because I really did experience it. So they don't see the logic of that at all.
Mm-hmm. Through the years, what is probably the most unusual thing that you've come across?
Oh, that's impossible to say. I get asked this question in every interview, I assure you. It's like saying, what is the best piece of pie you ever had in your whole life? Now, think very carefully. Go back through all the 80 years that you've been alive. I want you to tell me the best pie you ever ate. it's impossible to do that.
I think you summarized it, that there's really too many to mention.
Oh, yes. Indeed.
There's a woman out there by the name of Sylvia Brown. She claims to be a psychic. And you've had a number of run-ins with her, including some very colorful ones on CNN. It seems that every time you tried to confront her and others like them, they decide at the last minute to back out of whatever situation it is, like a controlled test.
Yeah, well, for example, we offered her on the Larry King Live show. We sort of trapped her into it. I offered her the $1 million prize, and she told Larry King and me and the whole audience all over the world that she would accept that and she'd be in touch with me. And then months went by, and we finally contacted her, and her assistant said that she didn't know how to contact me. Now, I'm alive. She talks to dead people, and she wasn't able to find my name in the phone book. And not only that, at that point, Google had 1.4 million references to James Randi and the James Randi Educational Foundation. She couldn't find me on Google. Now, that's incredible. Now she says, oh, yeah, she knows how to reach me because we sent her a certified letter with every bit of information, my family in Canada, everyone who knows where I am at any given time, sent her all that information. Now she says she doesn't want to contact me because I'm not a godly person. Well, it seems to me, in my naivete, that that would be all the more reason for taking the $1 million. Though it doesn't belong to me personally, I am in charge of it, and you'd think that taking $1 million from a godless man would be much more satisfying, wouldn't you think so, Sylvia?
I would think so. You know, with the years that your foundation has been around and this work that you're doing, is there a particular, let's say, region of the world where these kind of things are more predominant than others?
No. I have found that as I've traveled around the world, and I've spent lots of time in the Far East, in China, in Japan, Thailand, all over there, all through Australia, all through all of Europe, every bit that I've ever visited, there's no diminution in the belief in the paranormal. The media all over the world knows a good thing when it sees it. The media knows what brings in money, and promoting the paranormal is the one thing that brings them more money than anything else, and they will continue doing it. Again, I'm blaming the media for the promotion of so-called paranormal and occult and supernatural events, and some of my personal experiences with the media, major media outlets, where they've called me in as a consultant and then have refused to use any of my input when they prepare the eventual videotape on the program, convinces me that they just don't want to publicize the fact that people out there are being swindled. They're not being given services that they're paying for.
You know, one thing that does amaze me about the media, I mean, I'm in the media myself, and this is something that I'm always confronting and arguing with people, is that, okay, I mean, it's one thing, let's say, to have a TV series, right, about the paranormal, because, I mean, it's entertainment. But when news programs report on it as a serious news item, that's when I take offense.
Yes, oh, yes, and rightly so. Again, they don't care one way or the other, whether they're making a report, an actual news report, or they're just handling a novelty subject. It's all the same to them. They want people to have a belief in the paranormal because that's where the money is.
You know, another aspect, actually, it's not really connected, but of course there is a group of individuals out there who are, the conspiracy theorists. Hitler's alive, living somewhere in the South Pacific, and Elvis has been seen in ice cream stands everywhere. And, you know, this, of course, was also, in many ways, created by the media. This was also created by the media. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes, very much. And not only that, it's created by the fact that many people don't have enough education or common sense to try to figure out the difference between the truth and fantasy. Mm-hmm. And the conspiracy theorists, I'm giving them a whole chapter in my forthcoming book, It's just going to be called the conspiracy nuts. they are really demented souls who want to think that there's a conspiracy and everything. And I won't mention the gentleman. He's now passed away. He was a very good friend of mine and a very, very prominent scientist here in the United States. And one of his two sons is such a conspiracy nut that it would embarrass this man greatly if he were still alive and had to know that his son accepts everything that comes up if it has a conspiracy theory behind it. And that's almost everything that comes up, everything from global warming to the Gulf incident with the oil spill and such. Everything to him is a conspiracy, and it's planned by dark forces someplace or another.
Well, you know, something that I have noticed, and I looked into this last year when I did a program on UFO sightings. And, you know, when I look back, going back, let's say, to the late 1940s, when, you know, the B science fiction movie was the big rage. And then, you know, even about 10 years ago, The X-Files was on TV. It seems that when you have these TV shows that come along that are just pure entertainment, all of a sudden you get these sightings everywhere. And I keep saying to myself, you know what, if these aliens want to make contact, why do they always go to places like the town of Nicky Nuck Nuck somewhere in the Midwest where there's a population of two, you know?
Yes. Oh, yes. No, it's always a drunken fisherman or somebody in trouble with his wife at home who is abducted by aliens and taken aboard spaceships and has his private parts minutely examined, and he loves to give descriptions, very graphic descriptions of how exactly that was done. I created a bit of a farce myself, a rather impromptu one, many years ago. I used to appear quite frequently on a popular radio program when I was living in New Jersey. It took me about an hour to drive into New York City, where they did the program live, and I was on my way in one night to participate in the program, and the fog got so heavily across the highway that I had to actually pull over to the side and eventually make my way down a side road and into a populated town there that had a lot of lights because I couldn't drive any further. It was very, very heavy fog. And so in the days before cell phones, I had to find my way to a public telephone, and I called the radio station and said that I would be late. It was a five-hour program from midnight till 5 in the morning, a program that I eventually inherited from the fellow when he retired. But in any case, I called the station and said I'd be a bit late. And indeed, I was late. The fog cleared up enough that I could make my way, and I got into New York City. I burst into the studio, and I said that I had just been in Perth Amboy, New Jersey, where the fog was at its absolute maximum. You couldn't see your hand before your face. And I told them that I had been in a big crowd of people who were seeing UFOs, red lights passing overhead in triangular formation. I made this story up entirely, and the phone immediately began to ring from people in New Jersey. Said, yes, I was there. I saw Mr. Randy, and the flying saucers were this, that, and the other thing. They couldn't have seen the flying saucers. They couldn't have stepped out of their own homes because the place was completely socked in with the fog, of course. But I showed that you can manufacture a story that people will validate, and they will phone to get in on part of the action. They want to make sure their names were mentioned on the radio program. Oh, we mentioned the names, all right. I don't know how they faced their neighbors the next day, but I'm not part of that, so I don't care much.
Well, you know, it's almost just like that very famous broadcast that Orson Welles did in the 1930s of War of the Worlds, you know, where there were some people that took it so seriously, you know, not realizing, wait a second, this is Orson Welles speaking. He's an actor already, you know?
That's true. Now, mind you, Orson wasn't as well known as a radio personality at that time as he eventually got to be known. But the program was very well done for the day. We could have done much better today, of course, with all kinds of special effects. But it was very well done, and most people didn't listen till the end of it. They all turned their radios off and ran for the woods because they swore this was the end of the world. So they didn't hear the end of the program, and many of them didn't even see the reports in the newspapers the next day. But Orson Welles did a great sensation with that, and you would think that someone would have learned from it, but they don't.
Let me ask you a question. I don't know if you've been asked this before, but has anybody ever said to you, one of these people that, you know, that are mad, has any of them ever said to you, you know, Mr. James, I can't wait for the day that you pass away so you don't bother us anymore?
Oh, yes, all the time. About noon every day. Oh, yeah, no, people are consider me to be a nuisance because I'm stepping on their cherished beliefs. They don't want these things to not be true. In some cases, it's the only thing they've got going for them. Most of these people can't tap dance. They don't sing well. They don't have a family in many cases. And they have found a story that they particularly like, and they like to go around preaching and exaggerating. And that's the only thing they've got going for them. So they don't want that to be stepped on.
The James Randi Educational Foundation, how big a foundation are you? How many people do you have working with you?
Well, we have 4 to 5 from time to time, and people around the country who are associated with us and can do work remotely. They don't have to be here in the building with us. But we have, I don't know what our membership is at the moment. It's many thousands all over the world, and we have very powerful conferences every year. We had one in New Jersey Las Vegas just recently, and we have one coming up in London, England, and one in Australia before the end of the year. And these conferences raise a good deal of money for us from the subscribers who come to them, and we depend on that for our income, largely speaking, and also other generous people give us gifts every now and then, which is very, very welcome, of course. But we survive very nicely, and our accountant is rather happy with the condition we're in at the moment. So I'm not relaxing. We want more donations and such, and I want to send your listeners to www.randi, that's randi.org. Take a look at our webpage, which we titled Swift after Jonathan Swift, the famous satirist in England. He's now dead, so don't try to look him up in the phone book. Very, very dead. But I welcome people aboard. I want people to join us as members and certainly get affiliated with our various services and the various things that we do in order to try to inform particularly the media, if and when they will listen, as to what the truth is behind these rumors.
We'll give out the website, actually, on our own website for the link for this show, in case nobody had a chance to write this down. Now, not too long ago, your health was not too good. Just for those people out there who are against you, what do you have to say to them about your health now?
Well, I'm feeling okay. I've recovered from a double cardiac bypass, an operation for colon cancer, 6 months of chemotherapy, and I'm doing very, very well, thank you. For a guy 82, I have not slowed down one bit. I'm sitting at my desk in the office, staring at a computer page right now. I think that that I have quite a few good years in me, and as I say, I'm off to Australia and London. When do I go to London? That's in October, and in November I'm in Australia, and I've got a very busy December coming up ahead of me too. And next year we hope to actually do a conference in Zurich, Switzerland. So busy, 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 and I can't be happier.
Mr. Randi, thank you very much for joining us on the program. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you, especially from my point of view, that I've been following you for a number of years, and I always enjoyed watching you on television confronting these people.
Well, I knew somebody was following me, but I never turned around to look.
Mr. Randi, thank you very much.
Thank you for your courtesy, and I hope we can do this again very soon.
The one and only James Randi. You can check out the website for his foundation, which is very simply www.randi.org, and Randi is spelled R-A-N-D-I. And if you feel that you have magical and mystical powers, do take his $1 million challenge. But I warn you, because I, you know, told you to, I expect to get some of that money in return, you know. But if you want to, of course, you know, I have mystical powers. Yes, I could heal you of all ailments. For me to do so, you need to send me a check. Send $100 to the Happy Station Show, Calle Número 33 in Argentina, and then I will cure you. I'm being silly, aren't I? Anyway, once again, Randy's website is randi.org. Anyway, time now for a little bit of music. Let's take a listen to Barbara Streisand and Don't Rain on My Parade on the International Happy Station.
Don't tell me not to live, just sit and flutter. Life's candy and the sun's a ball of butter. Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade. Don't tell me not to fly, I simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Who told you you're allowed to rain on my parade? Fake it, hat, sir. I guess I didn't make it. But whether I'm the rose of sheer perfection, or freckle on the nose of life's complexion, the cinder or the shiny apple of its eye, I gotta fly once, I gotta try once, only can die once. Right, sir. Ooh, life is juicy, juicy, and you see I'm gonna have my bite. I'm a comer. I simply gotta march. My heart's a drummer. Don't bring around a cloud of rain on my parade. I'm gonna live and live now. Get what I want, I know how. One roll for the whole shebang. One throw that bell will go clang. Eye on the target and wham. One shot, one gunshot and bam. Hey, Mr.
Don't Rain on My Parade, the incredible Barbara Streisand. Our website, once again, is www.pcjmedia.com. I would now like to say hello to Charlie and Estelle Mentada, who live in Manila, Philippines. They're regular listeners to the program. In fact, Charlie told me that he listens to this show as it is relayed in Indonesia. Now, you may or may not know this, but the relay that we have for Indonesia, which is via Radio Sonora on AM and FM in Jakarta and around Indonesia, also has one shortwave frequency that apparently makes its way to the Philippines. So he says sometimes he listens to us off that frequency, but if the conditions are not so good, he goes to our website to download the program. Well, they sent a gift in the mail because apparently they heard me mention a while ago that there's something that I absolutely love. And some of you are thinking, oh, you shouldn't open strange boxes or anything that people send you through the International Post. But I know Charlie and Estelle. They started listening to this show many, many years ago. And they send little gifts every now and again. And I'm going to open the box right now. And I'm wondering, which one should I have? Let's see, not this one. I don't like that flavor so much. I have one right now, and it is absolutely delicious. Yes. Thank you very much, Charlie and Estelle Mentada. I'm talking with my mouth full in the Philippines for sending me a box of chocolates because you heard on a previous edition of the show that I love chocolate. Mmm. Yes. I don't know how I'm going to continue for the next bit. So that means it's time for me to go and have another cup of coffee. And I think it should be delivered by Frank Ifield.
Another cup of coffee, another cigarette, another hour of memories so very hard to forget. How your crazy loving arms held me so tight. Another cup of coffee, another lonely night. Another dime in the jukebox, another sad, sad song. All the time I'm thinking, another dream gone wrong. That dream where you used to say our love is so right. Another cup of coffee, another lonely night. Baby, I don't blame you for walking out on me, 'cause the way I cheated on you, I deserve this misery. Another love has found you, is such a lucky guy. Another's arms around you, I'm so sad I could cry. Baby, if you don't come back, I know what's inside. Another cup of coffee, another lonely night. Well, baby, I don't blame you when you walk right out on me, because the way I cheated on you, I guess I deserve this misery. Another love has found you, is such a lucky guy. Another's arms around you, oh, I'm so sad I could cry. Oh, baby, if you don't come back, I know what's inside. Another cup of coffee, another lonely night. One more cup of coffee, another lonely night. Another cup of coffee, one more lonely night.
Frank Ifield having another cup of coffee, and I was planning to do the same. And then I poured my cup full of coffee, put the sugar in, and put the milk, and then realized I just destroyed my spoon to stir it. Yes, well, that was a very bright thing for me to do earlier, was it? But anyway, let's now move to Dennis Tan. He is originally from Singapore, but he now lives in Germany. And he said many, many, many years ago, when he was a young boy, there was a singer from the United Kingdom who was very well known in Singapore. And had I ever heard of him? The singer's name is Dickie Valentine. And can I play something by him? Well, Dennis, guess what? We do have something for you right now, spinning round and round. Here's Dickie Valentine going out to Dennis Tan with My Favorite Song.
favorite song is the song that they play when we're dancing. Anytime that we're dancing, that's my favorite song. Just any old tune is my favorite tune when we're dancing. And as long as we're dancing, that's my favorite song. You breathe a magic charm into the melody, weaving a mystic spell in every word just for me. My favorite song is the song that they play when I'm dancing. Anytime that I'm dancing, dancing with you. You breathe a magic charm into the melody, weaving a mystic spell in every word just for me. My favorite song is the song that they play when I'm dancing. Anytime that I'm dancing, but that's only true.
Dickie Valentine, my favorite song, going out to Dennis Tan, who's originally from Singapore, but now calls Germany his home. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the International Happy Station Show. Special thank you, of course, goes to Kevin Lee, our technician, and our production assistant, Johan Backer. Our website, by the way, is www.pcjmedia.com. And when you're at the website, do check out the PCJ shop, as we have a new product, which I'm not going to tell you about because you can check it at the website. Go and take a look. And if you want to order, all the details are there. So, until next time, friends, this is Keith Parent saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.